want to get started with my first guest. This 2 weeks ago, for the first time, I think, in Illinois history, a former Illinois Department of Children and Family Services employee was sentenced to 6 months in connection with the death of the 5-year-old child, A.J. Frond. We're going to talk a little bit about the facts of this case. You may remember it. He was convicted of 2 counts of child endangerment after accused of failing to protect A.J. before his death, despite evidence of repeated abuse and neglect. And with us to talk about this tragic case and what this means for the DCFS is McHenry County State's Attorney Patrick Kennealy. Welcome to the show, Patrick. Thank you so much for joining me.
Karen, thank you so much for having me on. Happy Father's Day.
And happy Father's Day to you. I know that you have 4 children. Is that right?
Yeah, four mostly grateful children, depending on the day. But yeah, 4 little guys, Patrick, John, James, and Thomas, 10, 8, 6, and 4.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't know that they're going to get any more grateful as they get older. That's my guess.
I don't expect it either.
Except when college comes around, and then maybe they'll be a little grateful.
Yeah, right.
Anyway,
right.
Well, happy Father's Day, and I hope you got some really good ties and cufflinks and all of those things that you really don't need or want, right?
Right.
So can we talk a little bit about this case? We're going to have maybe about 5 minutes before I have to take a break, but can you set the stage for our listeners who either don't know this story or maybe forgot it or tried to forget it, actually, because it was so horrific and tragic, about little A.J. Frond?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a backstory that I'll try to get through as quickly as I can. But December 18th, 2018, Officer Shipaw, who's a Crystal Lake Police Department, that's our biggest town out here in McHenry County, she gets a call to the Taco Bell. And there she finds a woman by the name of Joanne Cunningham, who appears to be in quite a state. She says that her boyfriend, who's living with her husband, so it's sort of a strange living relationship, has stolen her Suboxone. And for your listeners that don't know what Suboxone is, it's like prescription methadone. It's used to treat opioid withdrawal symptoms. And there's 2 kids in the back, AJ and his younger brother, and they're both in nothing but diapers and a T-shirt. Remember, it's December, so it's very cold out. And so Officer Shipaw is sort of taking stock of the situation, runs Miss Cunningham, realizes she has a suspended license, shouldn't be driving in the first place, and says, look, why don't we get these kids home? Why don't we warm them up? And we can figure out what we're going to do next. So when they get home, AJ's running around just now in his diaper, and she sees this bruise on the right side. Now, I should also say that the house is just disgusting. It's got dog feces in it. It's got dog urine in it. It appears as though there's mice droppings. It's a huge mess. It's freezing cold. The windows are open. It looks like the fire is being used for heat. So just sort of like a hoarder type of situation. But anyway, she sees AJ running back and forth, and there's just like this huge, nasty, pluming bruise, you know, black, red, yellow, wrapping around the right side of his waist. And so she turns to AJ and she says, you know, AJ, what happened to you? And before AJ can answer, Cunningham sort of interjects and she says, AJ, the dog did that to you, right? And AJ, which is very common in children who are abused, just sort of says, well, he agrees. So Officer Shipaw's police sense at this point goes off. She realizes that there's something significantly amiss, and it also looks like she's looking at Cunningham, and it looks like she's either in the throes of a substance abuse issue or certainly withdrawing from one. And she says, look, I'm taking these kids into protective custody. We're going to the Crystal Lake Police Department. We're going to sort it out. So she arrests Cunningham for driving on a suspended license, takes the 2 kids into custody, calls DCFS, relays all of this to Carlos Acosta, who's a DCFS agent that responds. He goes and interviews AJ, basically asks him what happened to your waist. AJ repeats what his mom told him to say. The dog put its paw on me. He then goes and interviews Cunningham. And again, it's a very quick interview, but he doesn't even ask her about the injury to AJ. He just sort of goes through these background sheets, and she lies to him not only about her substance abuse, but also about her criminal record, which would have become clear if he had done his job, but we can get to that. Then he just says, all right, well, it looks like you're going to make bond. So I'm going to give you back custody of your children. And Officer Shipaw was flabbergasted at this. And she says, you know, you cannot give these kids back to her. Look at this bruise. That's clearly not caused by a dog. Anybody with eyes, and who's been alive for, more than 5 years could see that this is clearly not caused by a dog. You can't give those kids back to her, but he knows better. He just says, look, you got to go to the hospital. Excuse me. And when you get to the hospital, and he's supposed to go to the hospital with them under DCFS regulations. He doesn't bother doing that. So off Cunningham, Parker and AJ go to the hospital, and they're examined by an emergency room physician who's not a child abuse specialist. And she gets AJ alone, and she sort of is talking to AJ, and AJ says, maybe mommy hit me. Excuse me. Maybe someone didn't mean to hurt me. Maybe mommy hit me with a belt. So at this point, she knows that she has to stop the interview because she doesn't want to influence it. But when you're doing child interviews, especially with regard to child abuse, you have to conduct them in a very specific setting where the child feels comfortable and where non-leading questions are asked. So she calls Acosta, who should have been there, but he wasn't there, and he's at home. And she says, look, like, this is what AJ said. I'm very concerned. They cannot go home with their mother, and he needs to be examined by a doctor that specializes in child abuse. That's not me. And he also needs to be interviewed by a forensic interviewer. That's also not me. Costa doesn't do any of those things. Kids go home with Cunningham. Next day, he goes to the house. He sees Andrew Friend. Now, the house looks like it had been picked up a little bit. He doesn't make too many notes in his report about that. He sort of looks around like, hey, you see, he goes to Friend and he goes, you know, you see anything amiss? Any, what kind of punishment you guys do? He says, no, nothing. We're just living the idyllic, you know, suburban life. And he closes the case. And that's essentially was the end of it. 2 weeks after that, Cunningham has a picture in her cell phone that we recovered where AJ has this horrible gash on the right side of his head. In March of 2019, so that's 4 months later, Cunningham films this video where she is berating AJ, who's in a crib in nothing but sort of this gauze that's wrapped around his pelvic area. He has two raccoon eyes and just bruises covering his entire body. It looks like he had taken a horrific beating, and she's just there berating him for wetting his bed. A month later, she films an interrogation where she's interrogating AJ over some minor issue. And I don't know if any of your viewers ever sort of heard the tape recordings, but she's filming all of this, and the cadence and the sound and the tenor of her voice, the only way I can describe it is just evil. And I know many listeners may have a problem with that, but it cannot be explained by like a clinical psychologist suffering. It is nothing short of evil what she is saying and doing to this kid, and she's berating him for 18 minutes. In April of 2019, Cunningham and Friend call the police, and they say, our son is missing. We don't know. So they come up with this whole farce where AJ, they got up in the morning and AJ was gone. Well, it turned out that AJ had wet himself and Cunningham had taken him to the shower, and she had forced him to be in a shower with freezing cold water, and she ultimately beat him to death with the shower head. And again, it was, if you saw, and me and the staff at the McHenry County State's Attorney's Office and the police all had to see the autopsy photos, had to see some of those videos, and I can tell you not to explain how horrific it was. These are things that would haunt even the most seasoned, calloused prosecutor, police officer. These are things that are going to haunt me and many people on the staff for just the rest of our lives.
Patrick, let's take a break now. Let's take a break here. Yeah. This is just really riveting, and I want to continue to talk about what happened and then the prosecution of the parents, and then we'll get to the DCFS investigator, and I'd like to just hear exactly what was supposed to happen and what didn't happen. We're talking to McHenry County State's Attorney Patrick Kennealy. He served as the McHenry County State's Attorney since 2016, and we'll be back in a minute on WGN. Welcome back. We're talking to McHenry County State's Attorney Patrick Kennealy. He has been the state's attorney since 2016. He's spearheaded many programs that reduce crime and save taxpayer money. As a domestic violence prosecutor, he earned an award for peace and justice. And we're talking about the very unfortunate case of AJ Friend. Let's pick up where we left off, Patrick. We were talking about the prosecution then of the parents.
Mm-hmm. So before I get to that, let me just back up a little bit just because there's some necessary context that I got to get to. So I got to back you up to 2012. Cunningham is getting her first divorce. She's become addicted to drugs. She has a child, and she's going through a divorce. And she's been dropped by a number of divorce attorneys because of much of her erratic behavior. And so she's sitting in the McHenry County Courthouse, and she's on the ground, and she's crying. And along comes Andrew Friend, who had also had his fair share of issues with substance abuse, and he is about 20-plus years her senior, and he sees this nice-looking young blonde lady who at the time is in her early 20s, and he sees her crying on the ground in the courthouse, and he goes up to her and introduces himself, and so off they go. So he agrees to represent her. They begin a romantic relationship, and of course, they're both using drugs, particularly heroin. They're both getting arrested for things like retail theft. There's multiple domestic batteries, the multiple involvement with neighbors, multiple involvement with police. So all kinds of police reports are being generated in 2012, 2013, and 2011 as well. And anyway, long and short is that she loses custody of her older son. So now they're both a mess. They're both addicted to drugs. They both don't have jobs. Well, this is the best time to have a kid. So they decide that they're going to get pregnant. She has AJ. She has AJ in October of 2013. He's born heroin positive. So AJ is immediately taken away from Cunningham, and he's given to Cunningham's cousin. Now, if Cunningham is sort of the embodiment of darkness, the cousin is the embodiment of light. And I've met this woman, and after seeing the darkness of this whole case, she is the one bright shining light which sort of illuminates this whole thing. And thank God she has Cunningham's two other kids at this point. But anyway, she takes AJ for the first 2 years of his life. So he has like this normal sort of life, and he knows what normalcy is supposed to look like, which is one of the reasons why he stands up to Cunningham. And I think that's one of the reasons ultimately why he got killed. Anyway, it looks like, so they go through this big DCFS process and this court system process where they have to go get rehab. And it looks like they sort of straighten themselves out by 2015, 2016. They look like they can take care of their kid. DCFS and the court system give AJ back to Cunningham at this point. 2017, she meets this guy named Daniel Nowicki. Daniel Nowicki is an inveterate criminal, also a drug addict. They start having an affair, and Daniel Nowicki ends up living in the basement in the house that's owned by her husband, Andrew Friend. So in March of 2018, so we're now 9 months from December 18th when Acosta went to see AJ for the first time, Cunningham washes up in a western suburb. She's got track marks running up and down her arms, and she's passed out in the car, so she's taken to the hospital. At the hospital, when Friend and AJ and AJ's younger brother come to pick up Cunningham, the social worker notices like some weird bruising to AJ's head and calls DCFS. So DCFS is required to interview AJ as well as mom, as well as dad within 24 hours. They manage to catch up to AJ and mom and dad 5 weeks later in the front yard because they won't let him in the house. And after speaking with them, they say, okay, everything seems to all be in order here. We're going to close the case. In July of 2018, we're now 5 months away from Acosta's first visit. Cunningham shows up at Mount Sinai Hospital emergency room downtown. Again, track marks running up and down her arm. She admits that she's using 12 bags of heroin every single day. And she says she wants to commit suicide by walking in front of a bus. So they admit her to the psych ward. One day in the psych ward, she gets kicked out because she battered an orderly there. She threw a punch at somebody who was working there. She gets kicked out and charged with battery. So there's a police record as well as hospital records that would have been available. In August of 2018, now we're 4 months away from the call to Officer Shipaw in the Taco Bell parking lot where Acosta first got involved, she calls the police and said Daniel Nowicki has stolen her Suboxone. So it's almost the exact same call. And when they say, well, how do you know he stole her Suboxone? What happened last night? She said, well, all I remember is taking a bunch of my Suboxone, and I don't remember anything from last night. I just woke up the next morning, and there was no Suboxone there. So you have this trail of sordid behavior, which had been ongoing, and Acosta, as part of his investigation and pursuant to the regulations, was required to have acquired all of that stuff, but of course he didn't bother. And if he had, he would have seen all of these things, which would have made the neglect as well as abuse of AJ far more likely. He also would have seen that Cunningham was lying to him about her criminal record as well as her drug use. And so that played a huge part in our prosecution.
So let me just we just have just like 4 minutes left. And there's just so much I want to ask. I know that the DCFS is overworked, and I know that the DCFS must have a lot of burnout. These cases are horrific. These cases are hard to deal with, and I know it must be hard on the workers. But the judge said something in court that I remember the newspapers reporting, which was that this guy wasn't that overworked. Was that a fair statement?
No. Yeah. So had he been overworked, there's the consent decree, which is DCFS employees can't have more than 12 cases per 9 months and then 3 cases for 15 months. So had he been in violation or severe violation of the consent decree, that would have been part of the defense. That was never brought up because he was not in severe violation of the consent decree. In the 8 weeks that led up to December 18th of 2018, Acosta hadn't worked more than 30 hours a week. He was making $100,000. So I can't speak to the level or the burden of work across DCFS. I can only talk about this case, and it was not present in this case.
Let me ask you, do you think this is going to change the way things work at DCFS? Because this was unprecedented. This was something that was such a high-profile case, and it seems to me from the facts that you have recounted that this was an egregious situation. This wasn't just missing a little bit of something. This was time after time, thing after thing, so many red flags, as they say, more red flags than a Russian parade, right? It's like this was just such a horrific case. Do you think that this is going to change things, or is this going to hurt morale because people were rallying around what he did or didn't do, I guess?
Well, I hope and I pray that AJ's death wasn't in vain. So I hope that at least this case has had some individual corrective action with respect to some investigators. Do I think that it's going to change ultimately what goes on in DCFS? No, I don't. And the reason is ultimately because there's a few problems that exist in DCFS. So DCFS.
You know, I just have literally 30 seconds. I'm so sorry to do this to you.
Oh, you have 30 seconds. So. Yeah. Then ultimately, what I really hope happens is that people view this and they see what happened to Acosta, and they realize that while they do have a lot of discretion, if they don't even attempt to do their job because of cynicism, apathy, lack of empathy, then they will be held accountable.
I hope you are so right, and I hope you're right that he didn't die in vain, the poor, poor little boy. Thank you so much for joining us, McHenry County State's Attorney Patrick Kenealy. I know that you are not going to run again, and let's get you on when you focus on your next part of your career, which I'm very much looking forward to.
I'd really like that. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, and happy Father's Day to you. Take care.